It's the Ag Watcher Show. It's the Ag Watcher Show. It's the Ag Watcher Show.
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
It's your podcast, gents.
Yeah, that's all right. But we get you to do the intro.
Yeah.
This is like me turning up to your house and walking in and making myself a cup of tea without even saying hello.
Yeah, I reckon that's the best intro we've had so far. So we'll just keep that one.
Yeah.
It's very authentic. We'll let people guess who it is as we go through.
No, they'll get it from the first cackle and my question laugh. Everyone will be like, oh shit, it's another Olympia podcast, blimey Charlie.
Jeez.
There you go.
Well, that is fine, because this one will be different from all the other ones anyway.
For sure.
So, Olympia, you're from GoTerra. So we're going to talk about your business and what you do. But what we've got to do as responsible professional podcasters and professionals is the loosely used term.
You can tell straight away we're professionals just by how we set up the beginning.
I feel like I'm in a professional environment.
It's true. That's what we're aiming to achieve, and it's glad we've got there. So what we have to do as professional and responsible podcasters is make sure that you are competent enough to be on a podcast. So we're going to run a quick test on you, which we run all our guests on.
Yep.
It's an AI-driven machine learning algorithmic psychological test called the Sixth Sense.
Yep.
Some of the questions might sound strange, but they are part of the program.
Got it. So
we're going to give you a phrase or word.
Word association, basically.
And you're going to give us the first thing that comes back. Then the computer will spin out a result to tell us whether we can continue the podcast or not.
Look, I'm up for a challenge at all times. Let's do it.
Righto. Matt, you keep count.
Yep, I'll keep count. Six of them. I'll start with closed loop waste management.
Circular economy.
Brock's footwear.
Depressed.
I won't show you my feet then.
Black pudding.
The goodies.
Oh, wow. Yes, the goodies. I remember the goodies from a child. That's you wouldn't know them, Andrew, would you? The goodies.
Bill Oddie was a big eater of black pudding. The Ecky Thump.
There you go. So, Bill, fabulous comedians as well. There you go. Keep going.
Manufacturing in Australia.
Doomed for failure due to lack of energy grid.
Insect protein.
Go Terra.
Recycling.
Great idea, not enough infrastructure.
There we go. There's lots to talk about.
So the screens came up, and I think you did well. You passed based on the obscure reference to black pudding.
that was fabulous.
You didn't get Andrew.
I didn't get
Andrew's
it.
Too young. Andrew's too young.
It wasn't me.
It's
got
funny
it.
because it's actually a goodies skit that includes a Scottish reference, which I don't know what that says about you, or your heritage, or your allegiance.
Well, normally Andrew knows everything. He comes with all this Scottish, trivia. And that's one that he's been stumped with, one bit of Scottish trivia that he didn't know.
The goodies, is that show with the couple who moved from the city to the country?
No. It was it's like a skit show,
that's
three
the
comedians.
Good Life, Andrew.
Yeah. Oh, the Good Life. Yeah, because that's the one that Matt is living in just now.
I'm living the good life. I'm out, doing a whole lot of, environmentally friendly things. I'm doing a bit of closed loop. I've got a worm farm waste system on the property, so it's kind of a different system to what you run, but a similar concept where it's closed loop.
Yeah, it's great. Now, the goodies is different. It's an irreverent comedy of mega proportions and, laced with sexual innuendo. And
well, it was the 70s, candid, wasn't it?
Candid racism, but we were allowed to watch it as children and we loved it.
I got to give that a YouTube search. So, Olympia, tell us in a brief. I know you've done lots of pitches and whatnot, so I know you'll be able to do this brief. But tell us briefly what GoTerra is and what it does.
GoTerra is waste management infrastructure technology that delivers food waste management services for customers. And in the process of managing that food waste, we create protein and fertilizer with insects, which we sell as an offtake. So we're a circular economy solution for waste management for food.
Is it? And do you classify the insects as a farming type scenario? Is that what you'd call it as well, or is it more it's of a waste management?
Yeah, conveniently, and as a startup, we classify ourselves as whatever we like, depending on who we're talking to. But we do, when you think about it from a regulatory perspective, like we are waste management processors, and we are farmers, and we are feed and fertilizer producers. So we are managed and governed by regulation from waste management to farming to feed production to composting. And so we sort of have a quite dynamic, we can be whatever we want to be to whomever we need to be it. But that's the nature of building something that's never existed in the world. I think what Australia's been really good at with our type of technology is trying to figure out how they can adjust existing regulation to sort of get us to fit and work so that we can accelerate. But, yeah, we are a lot of things to a lot of people.
So in simple terms, you guys are taking biodegradable type waste, like food waste, and then feeding that to, is it black soldier fly larvae? Is that mainly, or is it a range of other insects? Or that's the main the main one?
Yeah.
And then they're creating both fertilizer, but also their protein sources that then get turned into a protein for animal feed. Is that right? Not human protein, is it?
Well, it could be, but we're just not there on eating maggots yet. But so basically insects eat perishable food wastes. That's their job. They're really good at. We've commercialized that capacity by creating an industrial sized robot that the insects can live in so that we can deploy the capacity or as a fee for service. So we've basically harnessed, if you will, this capability that exists in nature and made it an industrial solution that can be charged. And in the process of eating all that food waste, those insects become very high in protein and fat. And then we recover them from those machines and we sift them. So we get the maggots now and we have the maggot poo. And the maggot poo is very high in nitrogen, potassium and phosphorus. So, of course, you've got an organic material that's really valuable. And then you've got the protein, which, again, is a livestock feed additive. But it can be whatever you want it to be. It is a collection of very valuable nutrients and ingredients. So protein, the fat is a biofuel. You've got amino acids. You've got lauralic. You've got all kinds of things that are needed, melanin and chitin in industrial use cases. So you can use them for whatever you like, technically. And in the wonderful deck with all of the opportunities that we talk about in our business, we talk about those forward future things. But for right now, we use maggots to process food waste as a fee for service in a machine. And then afterwards, we take those maggots and their poo and we sell them into agriculture as commodities. So it's a pretty decent closed loop.
Yeah, which then grows the food again. It comes back to you as waste product. And so it's removing. I did see somewhere
it's like the Lion King. It's a circle of life.
Elton John has written a song about us, if you will. Yeah.
We can maybe add
not all startups can say that.
We can maybe jump into at the end, do a sing along.
But this is an important thing because if you go to global greenhouse gas emissions, and you might know more about this than me, Olympia, that if globally methane emissions that come from food waste and the decomposition of food waste is nearly the same, I think, as what is claimed for cattle methane or animal methane. Is it something like 6% because of the waste that gets set? It's 8%, right? So we're talking significant. What you're trying to remove in the process you undertake is a significant contributor of one of the key greenhouse gases, i.e. methane, right?
Three times greater emitter than the airline industry.
Yeah. So GoTerra are Canberra based, but are you just there in Canberra, or is it national? How does the structure?
So we built the first pilot plant in Canberra, which right now is about to do a bit of a revamp because she was built for 5 ton. She was accepting over 100 ton a week, and so she needs a she needs a considerable amount of upgrades before we've upset our neighbours further. But we are in six states. Sorry, four states, six sites, and about to be. There'll be another six sites coming online this year. So pretty rapid growth, which is exciting and terrifying all at once.
So is it quite scale? It sounds like it's quite scalable then, right? So you have effectively, if a way I imagine it, then in different parts of the country or regions, you can have the site that processes, and then or any green waste from around that area comes in, or food waste comes in, yeah.
Yeah, so we've made it this discrete sort of Lego block process so that effectively we just need to know the customer, the waste type, the amount of volume, and then we just go, you'll need one of these, three of these, and off you go. We
Okay.
only deploy capital on contract, so we don't build a big thing. It's not a field of dreams moment. We build it and then they come. And so we're a little faster to market than some of the other technologies that are out there that are big, centralized, more industrial scale. We still can process industrial scale volumes, don't get me wrong, but we're not trying to build it all at once. We can go in sort of with only one contract and then just add blocks and add front end so that you can scale more efficiently and more effectively. And so that's been sort of the key to rolling out so many units so quickly.
So in
Is it
terms,
just
so
food
waste? Is it just food waste that you're using, or is it other anything kind of green, biodegradable stuff like lawn clippings or something?
No green waste at the moment. We just do food and organic material, so we can do manures and things like that. It just depends. That just changes the end use of the product. So if we use manures, then those insects can't go to livestock feed.
Okay,
But
yeah. So
otherwise,
in terms of the So you effectively, let me sort of work it out. So you guys will contract, you have a machine in Canberra, for instance. Will you guys collect from restaurants, or do the restaurants bring it, or?
we don't do any collection where we can help it. That's not our job. There's a lot of players in the market that already do that job really well.
Yep.
We just act as landfill as a fee for service or composting as a fee for service. Like it's the same way we've always been managing our waste, but we just have a different end
Endpoint.
processing. And so, if you have us on site like they do at Lendlease, then that unit acts as a trash compactor. If you have us in Canberra or in Albury, where we sit as a processing site, then it looks just like a landfill or a recycling center. So it just depends on the use case of the customer and the customer segment we're serving as to how the unit operates, but it is able to be deployed and utilized in the way that the customer needs. So we're sort of meeting the customer where they are instead of saying, here's this service, but you have to interact with it the way that we want. And that's a really important part of food waste problem is that, and the reason why we're all having to have this fourth bin or the third bin, sorry, because having four bins is actually too many trucks. It's not a big enough volume. It all gets very difficult, and everyone's like, oh, I'll just shove it in with this other waste that's organic and it'll be the same. But the contamination of that waste is, the food then contaminates the green waste. It's not the same kind of waste. So you've got to change all the way you manage all the composting. It's not truly valorizing. It's a shortcut. If we're actually moving to a circular economy, we've got to valorize at each stage to the highest order of valorization, not like aggregate to get the highest order of
Or volume.
convenience.
Yep.
And so,
That's that is that is that one of the bigger hurdles that people aren't used to? Like, I mean, obviously, if you go back far enough, it used to just be one bin for everything, wasn't even recycling. And then we had the waste bin and the recycling bin. Now you're saying that we need to have extra bins so that the food waste can just be in one spot. But do you find that it gets contaminated still, or is that an issue
oh,
for you guys?
entirely. Yeah, humans, we can't be stuffed nine times out of 10, and that's the human condition. I think I don't need it to be 70 bins, but we do need to agree that if we are going to move to a circular economy and we agree that our resources aren't infinite and so therefore we have to do resource recovery, then source separation at some stage in the supply chain is imperative. And so if you are going to co-mingle as they do now in the yellow bin, then you've got to have a way to separate it. You've got to get away.
But it's because it's obviously a problem as well. Even recycling, you know, your glassware and your cans and stuff, people don't do that correctly either. That's why they got to use automatic pickers.
At the point where another country is saying we're not taking your recycling anymore because it's too dirty. We can't be stuffed even just rinsing the jar before we put in the bin.
There is an interesting one because, like, obviously, it reminds me a little bit of the collection agents who collect like fat and oils from restaurants. I don't know if they do it in the UK, in Australia, but in the UK they would take them away and then reconstitute them back into biodiesels. Which is a big thing in Europe now. It's a mandated thing, I think. But it's a similar sort of process. It's actually using food that would just otherwise go to waste somehow.
That's right.
Which I think is fantastic.
Do you reckon, because I noticed the difference, like I said at the outset, this is the third house we've built now, where I'm living now, and each of those houses, when we built it, we put in a worm farm waste system, which is taking all the black and grey waste. And because I'm living on property, it wouldn't work in a suburban area because you need the land to then have the transpiration trench, and that goes into the fruit orchard, which then fertilizes and waters the fruit trees, and then we get the fruit. It's like my own little circular economy. But we noticed when we started doing that, now I've done this for 25 years now, I reckon, this worm farm system, our rubbish bin waste, because we don't throw any food scraps or anything in that, that means that I put the bin out once every month and a half or something, because all of our food waste is going into the worm farm. It's a massive reduction if you just think about what you're doing. But it took us, whenever we had guests come, because we have a little bin, it's the worm farm bin, right? And so whenever guests come, it took ages for us to, our regular guests, they now know that there's a worm farm bin in our house for all that waste. But it took years to get people used to looking for that bin, right? And so you're trying to change people's behaviours, really, aren't you? To be able to extract value.
Yeah, so we work at the commercial level, which is a little bit different because commercial has an economic driver to remove that volume from their landfill bin because the cost of landfill is going up and this is the heaviest thing going into landfills, so removing it reduces your landfill costs. And there, you know, a lot of them have net zero initiatives that they need to try and achieve, and so there's a lot of different drivers to their local household. I think, you know, when you think about adoption and change, I think what we're challenged by in Australia is just this unique sense of privilege, and it's not that we're not committed or interested in the environment, we just don't have enough pressure or pain on our resources yet for us to feel a need or an impetus to bother with these things. And so when everything's always been this, I equate it to the difference of being someone from the city and always having your water on tap and being someone from a farm who's had your water in a tank. If you're someone on a farm, it's like as not you brush your teeth without turning the tap on, and your showers are just inherently shorter, unless you're in a hotel room, because then you're like, hell yeah, I'm going to bath. Whereas if you're from town, you run your water, you are less frugal with your water just because you've got this belief that it will, when you turn that tap, it will always turn on. And so, we've got a challenge in our belief of what is truly going to be constrained and where we're going to have trouble, because we're not feeling it yet. And until we feel it, you just won't have change, aside from those crunchy granola folks like myself who, you know, want to make a difference up front. But I think what I've always said is that the way you affect change is not just by providing technology that forces people to have to do things differently, but you also say and speak that you've made those changes yourself, right? So I think you've got to sort of talk with your families and friends about, like, this thing as an importance, to get more people to realize, oh shit, this thing's actually real and important and needs to happen, rather than, oh, we'll just get to it once it collapses or it's an issue. I don't know. We've seen the challenges with COVID. That's not going to be the last time this happens. We are seeing the constraints of the war in Ukraine on agricultural inputs. It's not going to be the last time this happens. The next drought, you know, Australia imports most of its soy. We just need one good drought in the soy producing areas of the world for that to truly impact our inputs. What are we going to do? Where are we going to get inputs from in a country that doesn't create enough of its own inputs? So I think we've got to start sort of shifting sooner or later, and we've got to have, I think we don't need to be righteous, but we do need to start bringing these conversations to the table. And Australians just don't. We're just too polite.
We've sort of found the same as well, because Matt and I are, we're partially sponsored by Pacton Park, which is a, what do you call them?
Well, they're a small English goods kind of manufacturer. And
so we're big advocates for things like black pudding and haggis because of the lack of wastage involved in producing them.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same sort of thing. It's about sort of utilizing as much as possible and not letting things go to waste in landfill.
But then on the other side, we like Crocs, which are kind of made out of, you know, pretty bad environmentally unfriendly products. But then they do last forever.
Oh, get not like
yeah.
I bought those are new ones actually for the beach.
Oh, you've got more.
He's got a whole collection. He's got a whole collection. No, he's got a whole collection.
He's like, do you know what? More. I'm going to double down on the insanity and buy more of the ugliest shoe known to man. And they're not that comfortable.
They are, because these
ones
must
have hobbit feet to believe they're comfortable. Anyone with an actual shape to their foot do not find those absolute disgusting things.
Wait till you try fur-lined Crocs.
I won't.
Because they are so comfortable.
No, I have dignity and self-respect, so I will not. And
Jeezy peeps.
It's going to get to fisticuffs soon, isn't it?
It's a bit hardcore.
I wouldn't fight over a croc, to be fair.
I actually have a technical question to ask.
Crocs?
No,
crocs. Because I used to be an animal feed trader way back in the day.
Ooh.
So I was curious, what is the protein content of the meal?
They are what they eat, but on average, we're sitting at about 45 to 47%.
So pretty much soybean meal.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same.
But the kicker is the fat content is about 37.
Ah, so lower digestible matter. Digestible energy.
That's right. So they're actually a pretty decent pig food if you think about it, given we don't raise any of our own corn, Andrew.
And Matt and I used to be pig farmers.
We used to be pig farmers. We did. We sold the pig farm last year.
Yeah, I like pig farming.
Well, that's one of the things I miss is the manure from the
farm. Matt liked pig farming.
Did you, Matt?
Andrew hated it. Yeah, Andrew hated it, actually. If he's honest with himself.
If I'm honest, it was one of the best days of my life was selling the pig farm. I could never get used to the smell. It made me feel sick every time.
Yeah, fair.
I'm too much of a city boy.
Yeah, so. Fair. It's acquired, I dare say.
It's a bit like a dairy. A dairy is the same. I did a bit of work years ago on a dairy, and dairy has a similar, but it's a different kind of poo smell. It has a unique dairy poo smell to
dairy
pig poo
smell.
Dairy
has a different ting to it. Pig manure has, like, pig manure smells like bacon gone bad. That's a different odor to, you know, the sweet smell of a dairy.
And it was also the ammonia. It's the urine, it's the smell. Anyway, on that tangent, away from talking about feces for a minute. So back to like the actual byproduct or the end product, the feed. How do you get it in? You mentioned earlier on about human use for proteins.
Yeah.
How do you convince people to use it? Because I've eaten insects. I've eaten pretty much everything you can think of.
Yeah, sure.
But who hasn't been Scottish deep
on a highway and had copped a bug in the mouth? We've all eaten an insect at one stage or another in Australia. I think, look, here's the thing. I don't need everyone to eat insects, and I don't need everyone to have their animal eat insects, but if we have like, what are we agreeing on, right? So from an agricultural perspective, I believe, if we just talk about Australia, I believe that we've got a feed input constraint problem, and we rely too heavily on international imports of feed to have sovereignty over our own agricultural supply chain. That's my belief. You can believe or not believe that.
No, but I believe, I think you're right.
Yeah. And so if that's true, then Australia, just even from a sovereignty perspective and a security perspective, needs to secure ways to feed itself that do not require shipping containers on boats from other places. And so ipso facto, some protein from other places, algae, seaweed, insects, have to be on the agenda. Now, do you need to eat them? No, but you don't need to eat quinoa either, or kale, and people still do. And so I think, yeah, like, anyway, but I think that's the argument, right? Like, we have to have a higher variety of options to fill the supply chain, and they've got to come from different areas and sources, and we've got to make more inputs to the supply chain from not from the existing resources. And so insects are unique, same as algae, to that problem, because we can create more protein with an input that currently has no use. It's going, 95% of it's going to landfill. So make protein that is higher value than electricity, that is higher value than going into composting, that is higher value than any other option, biochar. Make it into protein for feed for animals or for humans. That is the highest value you can do to food waste. And so if humans want to eat it, knock yourselves out. Like, at 47% protein, that isn't a bad day. And I know CrossFitters, they'll eat anything.
Yeah, a lot of bodybuilders. Bodybuilders have the cricket. Yeah, could ground less. Up crickets. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking that, because if you, like, I have a few supplements and stuff for sports, and I have no idea what the protein content is in, say, whey or whatever else, but I'm assuming it's probably
28.
So get on the insects, get jacked.
Yeah, just mainline it straight up.
Jesus.
Everyone would be outside the Planet Fitness, just like
bit of cricket.
Powder. Yeah, yeah. There'll be needles in the car park, but it'll be from people shooting up maggot protein straight into the vein.
Cricket cocaine.
Yeah, so, yeah. What have you been doing, Derek?
Well, maybe that's what you could do. You could actually put the you could set up in Colombia, and you could recycle the coca leaves.
No, we don't need to. We just be in Australia and just
We can do it all here.
Colombian bam bam, it'll be Australian bam bam or something like that.
Correct.
What you're describing, though, is not, we said recycling at the outset, but it's upcycling, isn't it? Because you're creating something of greater value from the waste.
Recycling, you technically in a circular economy should always.
You're going down the scale, whereas you're actually creating something of more value, right?
Yeah. So again, like, we can, you have all these anaerobic digesters on the back of biosolids and sewage treatment plants. We can take that residual sludge and then run it through insects, and now you've got protein again. And that is higher value than sending that sludge to composting. Then you can send the resulting insect manure to composting, and that's still higher value than if you'd taken the sludge. So, again, what's happening in our supply chain is we're like, older, more entrenched ways of doing things are saying, oh, we've been here for ages, just shove it into this model so that we still exist. But what the rest of the – but that's counteracting against the reality of the inputs and the constraints. And so it's like this immense pressure to be like, be more valuable. But then the existing infrastructure, the existing technology, the existing logistics are all like, be the same. And the third bin is the best example of that. It's like, just shove it in this bin and we'll just process it all together. And then that way it fits in the supply chain. We don't have to buy more trucks. It sort of works, right? And it's just like, except we've just wasted all that value into sort of the lowest value product, and it's cost us a shit ton of money to pick it up.
Is that the biggest, what you described there in terms of the existing infrastructure, I guess, for want of a better descriptor, because what you're saying, it sounds like a no-brainer, right? Why aren't we just doing this? But then it's how we've done it in the past. It's what's holding us back.
Well, I think, again, the balance that you have to handle as a ag tech or a climate tech founder, I found that it's a little bit different to imagining a new world in, say, fintech or health tech, is that no, if you ask 10 people what a climate changed world looks like, they'll give you a different answer, even if those same 10 people believe that climate change is real or agree that it's real. And so your belief as to what is needed to be true for agriculture in a climate changed world is different almost to the man or woman that you're talking to. And so the technology advancements are like, is it robots? Is it this? Is it that? What, like, where's the solution going to come from? And so I think you've got to come back to first principles and go, what is true? What do we agree? And I keep coming back to sovereignty of any nation sits around its ability to feed itself and to defend itself. Right now, we might be all right on the defend bit. Don't want to start a discussion about 35s or submarines, but we aren't safe or secure in relation to feeding ourselves. And that's something that Australia needs to sort of figure out.
And you're saying that because of the reliance on the inputs, not because we do actually produce an excess of food here that gets exported.
With inputs from external sources. So take away all the soy and then tell me how much we produce, and then talk about confidence to produce that reliably year on year based on drought, flood, fire. And you go, okay, where do we create security for our agricultural supply chain? And then use that as the motivator to determine what technologies or what thesis we have to have around valorizing and upcycling versus recycling. And I think if we could just shift our focus on, oh, everybody wants this net zero initiative, so we'll give them a solution that sort of fits into the old way, instead of going, they've got a net zero initiative for a reason, and here's the drivers, and here's where this is going. And that means this has to be an upcycling solution because it actually fit. Why do I say actually so much? It's driving me mad. We have to sort of fit this into an end case or the use case of where these drivers are coming from. The drivers are coming from all of these regions and nation states looking around and going, okay, if the world's going to be unpredictable on climate and we can't produce enough to feed ourselves, what, as a nation, if we're importing all these inputs to feed ourselves today, does that then mean we're going to have the challenge doing that in the future? And most nation states are saying yes. And so we've got to adjust thinking about how and where we get our resources.
So protein's one aspect. You mentioned as well that you're creating a fertilizer of sorts too. If you could scale it up to as big as you like, what does that do for reducing our requirements on imported fertilizers? Like,
bugger all. Yeah, bugger all, which is interesting, right? Because you were only wasting a certain amount of food. So we waste 7 million tons of food a year. I don't consider the first 2 million tons because that's all agricultural waste. I look at my talks chat, like, completely freaked Andrew out. He's not talking anymore. He's done.
No, I'm just.
It's time to hoard pharmaceuticals and protect the elderly.
I'm just thinking.
He's Googling how to build bunker for a post-apocalyptic world.
Oh, I've already got one of them.
Yeah.
I just got a Matt's house. I'm still thinking about the snorting crickets. So,
yeah, cool.
Because I was
like 10 minutes ago. And now
I was thinking about it makes like a new sort of meaning to the whole term that's getting maggoted.
Yeah, so. It's going to revolutionise the term, in fact, entirely. So. You do it and then suddenly you get lats and traps that like – beyond belly. So look.
The fertiliser, you were saying about the fertiliser.
Yeah, so if you take 7 million tonnes of Australian food waste, first 2 million tonnes I don't consider scalable because it's all coming off farms, so it's wasted, not waste. So you got 5 million tonnes thereabouts of food waste a year. If we processed all of it, which would never happen, we're only going to put 25% of that is going to be actual fertiliser because that's the ratio of consumption to manure output. And so it's not a lot, but it's a meaningful amount into the supply chain that frees up something else further downstream. And it's the same as insect protein. For every 10,000 tons or however insert large number of protein that I produce of insects, I can put that into pets or poultry or aquaculture and free up a portion of protein back up the supply chain to pork, cattle, and sheep, and that's where we get wins. It's the early days of insect protein, they were like, we're going to stop the overfishing of the oceans and we're going to replace fish meal. And it's like, so
yeah,
just
no chance.
So clear, I've done the maths and I'm not good at maths, but I don't reckon that's true.
No.
And so, yeah, we're just trying to fill gaps here for people.
But I suppose that fertilizer, like most of those facilities you have are going to be in capital cities, major towns, etc.
No,
actually,
Andrew, that's presumptuous of you.
I'm just making assumption. So where will it be?
It's where the customer wants us to be, and metros are important, but metros also tend to be where all the conventional infrastructure is, because that conventional infrastructure needs high volume inputs to actually even be validated. So, for example, anaerobic digesters, I don't think there's like four cities in Australia that can support a proper sized anaerobic digester. And they need like 60,000 tons of volume to go into them every year. But Griffith doesn't get anything because it's not big enough. And Tamworth is sort of halfway big enough, but not really. And Wagga's not big enough. Albury's not big enough. Shepparton's not big enough. They're dealing with high volumes of food waste out there, because that's where we pack and manufacture and produce food, not just where we waste food. And so, you know, we think about it more as a hub and spoke model inverted on the agricultural supply chain. So we are putting our hubs in the regional communities where agriculture is, and manufacturing for agriculture and production for agriculture happen. And then we are bringing the inputs back. So, for example, the hub for Brisbane will be in Toowoomba or thereabouts. Yeah. And you will transport the maggots to Brisbane and you'll bring the maggots and the fertilizer back to Toowoomba. And that way then you're processing the product and the offtake in the regions and it goes back out to agriculture and you're managing the service from the regions.
But a lot of those places, like say Toowoomba, Wagga, they are areas where there's a lot of farmland around them and a lot of organic farmland as well in those areas, which I'm imagining, I'm not making an assumption now again, is that your fertilizer is organic?
Yeah.
Would be classified as-
well, it's not organic by, if it's in biodynamic realms, but technically to be organic, it has to eat an organic product to become an organic. So, but it does fit in the same ethos of, if you think about sort of those mid-sized pasture raised or ethically raised or ethically farmed type cohorts and customer segments, I think it fits there. And again, if we can provide inputs for that cohort, it frees up inputs for.
I'll give you a few tips. There's a lot of organic fertilizer that is from animals that haven't eaten organic food.
I'm just saying. It's a spicy topic, Andrew, but that's how they've qualified it.
Do you want to know another tip as well?
I do.
Organic certification is obviously not a mandated thing and it's not a government sort of run thing. It's not legislative. So you can go out tomorrow and create your own organic standard and then, you obviously put it under a different name. It wouldn't be sort of GoTerra. It would be Off-Terra.
Sarah's Green.
Stop Terra.
Ag watches organic certification.
And then we just say, we're happy that, you know, GoTerra is organic.
Yeah.
And we'll give you a stamp. Off you go.
I'm both delighted and discouraged to learn that fun fact. And I've written it down for later. And
I thought you were about to say I'm disgusted by the two of you.
She's still disgusted by our croc.
I still
can't get past that.
I've loved Andrew for many years, but the croc bits, you know, it's definitely darkened my opinion. Unfortunately, I feel a loss, a sense of loss.
Now, I'm glad we're not kind of fighting about the cross again, because in April we're going to be in the same venue, I believe, for a few days. The Agri-Futures event in Melbourne that you're speaking at.
You just...
Oh, no, what's it called?
It's called the Future Ag Expo.
Future Ag, that's the one. Future Ag Expo, that's the one.
This is why we're
there. Are you sponsored by that organisation by any means?
What's that?
Not What's anymore. That? Obviously not anymore.
But every future's a cane.
Oh, jeezy peeps.
The Future Ag Conference, yes.
That's the one in April in Melbourne. Yeah.
Are we going to do a live show there? You're
presenting there, aren't you, as well?
I am, yeah.
So are you talking about...
off my heels of my Agri Futures presentation where I called out an American speaker and then lambasted the Australian ecosystem for 30 minutes. It was great.
That was at Evoke Ag in Perth. Was that good, the conference?
It was a good conference, yeah. I think, I really would like to see conferences start to actually become more of a meeting of the minds rather than a sharing of
sponsors.
Insert name here, TED Talk. And I think they did do a good job this year of trying to get sort of like challenge status quo and like bring in a little bit more edge to the conversation, which I really appreciated. But for me, if you're going to bring 1,800 people or 2,000 people to a room, then like, can we all actually use those minds to workshop some things or challenge some, like actually interact properly and take those insights and use them or put them somewhere? Because I don't think you're getting the most out of the convention. We just eat food and talk to people we know. We'd like, or get, you know, a 10-minute call conversation with someone you don't know next to a ficus. Like they don't tend to be super meaningful engagements all the time, but I think they did a good job.
So what are you presenting on at Future Ag Expo, Matt?
Future Ag Expo. I'll write it down.
You're right.
Yeah.
So you didn't realize there was a whole ruse, because now we've spoken about Future Ag Expo multiple times. So it was all put there to make people realize it's different to Agri Futures.
people forget that we're trained
actors.
It's
all a tactic. It's all a tactic.
Matt and I are big, as you could have tell at the start of the podcast, we focus heavily on psychology.
Yep. Yes.
And Matt and I have got it. Well, I've got more of an interest in behavioral economics. So we're sort of using all these skill sets as a nudge theory.
I want to understand what you learned from my first ants Q&A.
Look, it's probably better we talk. We're going to talk offline about that.
You know, we don't want to.
Like this is going out to thousands of people as podcasts, and I don't think it's appropriate to talk about your results.
Understood.
We'll get sued again, Andrew. Well, we could just say that one thing that stood out was you're obviously a very competent knowledge of humour. You know, with your reference to the obvious. So you straight away you're up in a fairly high level of humorous capacity.
I've been known for the jokes for sure. Yeah, I'm well known for the jokes.
But going back to it, what are you presenting on at Future Ag Expo?
That's actually a great question, and I can
tell if you want, because it's in front of me.
Really quickly to Google that and see, but I'm not sure. But it's likely I'll be talking about sort of how, you know, ag innovation and sort of my current screaming soapbox at the moment.
And you're also doing a panel called Unlocking Climate Smart Farming for Profit.
Exciting.
So Matt and I are also there. Matt.
Oh, great.
We will be doing a presentation on, what are we doing a presentation on, Matt?
Is it something about
markets? That'll be it.
Yeah, but also about, you know, just the kind of the present volatilities and didn't you come up with a really nicely catchphrase thing that you stole from someone?
Something like some AI something
about the best of times, the worst of times, or something like that.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really cliche.
What's the insight? What's the insight? What are we thinking?
That's why I'm talking to you. I'm just going to talk about how we need to build bunkers.
It becomes a bunker conversation.
And I'm also doing a panel, Building Resilience in the Face of Geopolitical Disruption, which is my favorite topic. So I much prefer a panel to a presentation? Because we're doing a presentation.
Yeah.
It's just easier because you can just talk off the cuff.
Oh, I talk off the cuff in my presentations. The last presentation I did at West Tech Fest, I moved a couch as part, like
with your mind, or
with your mind.
Or
wow,
just levitated. Well, the couch.
Telekinesis.
They put me on last, so I was a keynote speaker last, and I was like, oh, you've got to come with a bit of waka waka to, you know, get that to go.
So you moved the couch and threw the TV off the stage.
I didn't throw anything.
Nothing.
No. I just moved a couch, which turned out to be way heavier than it appeared.
But once you went to lift it, you were committed, so you had to.
And then you said,
that is exactly what happened. I nearly busted a fluffer valve.
So then you moved the couch, then you just said, that is the power of snorting crickets and maggots.
No, it was far more harried. I was like, got on the stage and there was like couches everywhere. And I'm like, the stage was super long. And then there was all these people in there. So I'm like, I can't stand in the middle because, like, what am I doing? So I knew I was going to wander about a bit. And there's two couches in the way. So I dragged one out of the way and I went to do it with one arm because I thought it was one of those conference, like those super lightweight things. And it was really heavy. So I
bolted to the floor.
Yeah. Afterwards, a really lovely gentleman came over and informed me that he thought it was a really good speech, except for the couch moving and swearing.
So when we can tell when we're getting to the end of the podcast because we start going off on tangents around moving couches and things like that.
Sorry, but that's me.
If you could pull one lever to get a result to make your ideas for GoTerra and growth happening quickly, what would you do? What's the biggest hurdle that's stopping you from kind of progressing quickly with this?
At the moment, it's capital. It's just raising money. So, you know, biggest downturn in the venture capital market in insert period of time here. Everyone who overvalued rounds 2 years ago are now informing us that we must take down rounds now. And it's like, great. You know, you inflated market. So sure thing, Patagucci person. And and then we, you know, so you just sort of try and figure out how to, you know, raise around in this sort of fear space that the venture capital world is in. We've done a hell of a lot of heavy lifting. We've done a lot of good work, but it is a challenge because we are right on the edge, on the pointy edge of like a new, I had to build a new industry. We have to own a few too many verticals. It's ag. Does ag make money? And I'm like, I don't know. It feeds the world, you'd think. Like, it's just this sort of, we're in this difficult space. But I have a lot of confidence. It's just at the moment, you know, we're moving quickly. The customer needs really, really there. But the next round of funding is sort of critical to us sort of hitting commercial growth and scale. So, you know, that's why I look like I'm about a million years old. I live under a bridge.
It's sort of, it reminds me of what you said at the start of the conversation about you can be what you want to be in a startup. You can be food, you can be agriculture, you can be fertilizer, you can be waste. And those are all, and environmentalism, those are all pretty big keywords at the moment.
Yep.
So I guess you, okay, who was a singer, Matt?
In general, or
a little bit more information?
Say what you want to say, be who you want to be.
Oh, you can do what you want to do, be what you want to be. Yeah, that one.
That was like a socialist song from the UK.
I know the song.
Was it Texas?
Say what you want to say, be what you want to be.
It's like a 70s song, isn't it?
I wouldn't know that, would I?
Yeah. Do what you want to do, be what you want to be.
Texas. Yeah. Say what you want to say.
No, that's a different song.
Say what
that's
you want.
No, Texas
But it's right. The song. But going back to it, it does tick off a lot of boxes, and that's why I think sort of quite interesting is the fact that it does have those sort of different sort of areas of coverage. So,
yeah, we do hit all of the right things. I think that is both a blessing and a curse. I think one of the challenges right now is that people just don't are still on the fence as to whether or not ag is VC backable, which is an interesting question, frankly. And yeah, I think that that's the bit that, you know, and when we talk about the inputs going and all these contracts, they're just like, are they big enough? And I'm like, again, we're feeding the world.
Well, that's the thing. I guess as the population is still rising globally, and food production is going to come under more difficulties in the coming sort of decades. And that's when I think food investment does become more important. And I think that's where it should be phrased, and not just for you, but for all ag tech, is moving away from that agricultural investment. It's a food investment, which I think is more attractive.
Ooh, spicy. So I might need to, can I reverse this and you got a podcast out of me and I get an hour of mentoring out of you?
Look, I think I don't really want to publicly say yes, because then what's going to happen is your VC investors are going to hear, oh, these guys got mentored by Matt and Andrew. They blacklist them. Like, because the last person Matt, you know, mentored was the Fire Festival. And
I watched the documentary. That went off great.
Well, it went off. And then before that, Matt came to Australia, he was working in the UK. He did a stint.
All right. There. I did 2 years in the UK. Well, yeah, okay.
Working with Enron. And he came back in 2008 to Australia after you'd started at GFC. So look, you can have advice from us, but just don't tell anyone. Because
if Adam Newman can get another startup and more backing, I'm sure the two of you can mentor and there still is, have
as outcomes. There's actually a new documentary on that on Netflix, but it's geo-locked to the USA, so I'm going to get off the VPN to watch it.
Oh, you can't watch it unless you're in America.
Yeah, so I'm going to get a VPN to watch that one.
Yeah.
But we have found a difficulty as well, is because like, we're not sure whether we are, you know, a counseling service, a serious podcast, shit comedy. It's like
you're two of the three you just mentioned.
Yeah. Shit.
Well, and actually, rather than a comedy, more a joke.
I would actually like to point out, Matt, that we're actually in the recycling industry.
Yeah, that's true as well.
Because we recycle a lot of old content and a lot of old jokes.
Yeah.
Well, I would suggest that this is the first time in probably a decade that Ecky Thump has been brought up on a serious media platform.
Well, that's,
and again, as a Scottish person, you should really go and watch it.
I should. I think that's what my day will be after this podcast.
He'll go down the rabbit hole of the oddies on a good
Bill Oddie in the world of Ecky Thump.
Bill Oddie. It wasn't Bill Oddie, was it?
Yeah, Bill. He was one of them.
He was.
I can't remember the other.
Does Bill Oddie does the nature shows?
Yeah. Well, he was a goodies.
He's a comedian as well.
He used to wear merkins and make fun of Tim, whatever his name was. What was his name? Tim.
Right. Okay.
Tim Brooke Taylor.
Yes, that's him.
So it's okay, Matt. I'll ask my mum and dad about it. They'll know about it.
They will know about it.
Oh, there was... with that death blow. We're going to bring this podcast to a close.
It could have been worse. You could have mentioned Benny Hill. So we didn't go down that pathway.
As a 25-year-old, it's difficult for me to relate. Okay. Now that I've shaved my beard off.
Yeah.
As a 25-year-old,
I shaved mine off recently as well. Looks good.
So anyway, I reckon we will call it there. It's been really interesting. I found it fascinating because I love innovative ideas because
having a laugh on a podcast, so thanks for that.
Well, we'd normally try and keep it as serious as possible, and so
my apologies.
We'll edit out
all the laughing.
It might be a minute long podcast where Matt mispronounces the name of the conference that's sponsoring this episode,
and he also called you Olivia at one point as well, so there's going to be
that's a common one.
There's going
very
to be a...
I corrected myself very quickly.
Just correct yourself doesn't absolve you of the initial mistake. So I think we're going to have a review of the podcast. And to be honest, Olympia, we might get rid of Matt and just get you on time host.
Right. Fine. Yeah. Just let me know.
We can discuss it at the Future Ag Expo.
And we'll
I'm looking forward to that. and I'll come find you, and we'll have a redo, and we'll talk goodies.
Just bring some of your super cricket powder for us to, or your maggot powder.
Our presentation will just go off.
That would make for some serious. That would be a serious vox pop. The three people snorting maggot stuff.
I think that would be much better.
Getting maggoted.
That'd be much better than doing moving a couch. Is just
well, and I've brought maggots into Parliament House. I'm happy to bring them to wherever the expo is, and we can consume them and
have a toast.
Because Matt is an ex foreign exchange banker, so his only requirement is that he's not willing to snort in anything below $100 note. So
and nor should he. Don't.
You've got to have standards. You've got to start somewhere. Yeah.
So I've still got a few £1 notes from back home before they got rid of them. So
which is worth about the same.
Because I'm a man of the people, and I want to actually do a correction before this podcast goes out as well, because my Auntie Julie will be listening to this podcast.
She will be. She'll be very disappointed.
Hi, Auntie Julie.
And I want her to know that I do not imbibe in any drugs apart from. Apart from the occasional bag of wine for breakfast.
Right, you just keep them out on your clothesline. Is that where they are? Just hanging.
I just have it on an IV next to my bed.
Yeah, got it. Fair. So, as you should. Aunt Julie would be proud.
She is very proud, and she loves the podcast. And also, Matt, actually, one thing I forgot to mention is we do have to use those vouchers that Matt got us for lunch.
For Christmas vouchers, but maybe we can go out for dinner in Melbourne when you come down.
The vouchers are for Canberra, Matt. So.
Ah, okay. All right, then. I'll have to come up then.
You should come to Canberra and see the maggot farm.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good, actually. Next time I'm up there, I might have a look. That'd be great.
Come see us. It'd be lovely.
Right on.
Very good. Thank you for coming on. It's been interesting. We'll look forward to catching up with you in April.
At the agrifutures/futureagexpo.com.
Correct. Thanks very much, Olivia. See you when you got nothing on.
Ciao for now.
Bye, guys.